Welcome back to Ungroundable, the show where we ruin parents by telling them all the secrets of things we held all these years.
Yeah.
Held on tight to.
You did. Start smelling it.
Yeah. Did you know one time this boy that I really had a crush on, he liked me and he brought me flowers on Valentine's Day. This was in seventh grade. And then he called me fat and then I slapped him.
Yes, I would have slapped that little shit too.
I didn't tell you because I didn't know high five if I was going to get in trouble for slapping him, but I slapped him and I slapped him good.
I slapped a boy in junior high once too.
You did?
I did.
Why? What did he do?
Well, we were making out the week before and then he brought another girl the week after and I just slapped her right across.
Oh my God, it runs in the blood. High five, slap it, babe. I'm so excited about our guest today. We have another little teeny tiny human joining. Actually, she's like so teeny tiny.
She might be teenier, tinier than us.
I know. It's an honor and a pleasure to have her. Anjali Bimani. She is a voiceover actress, a writer, just a mega superstar. And I kind of feel like we scored having her.
I think so.
Yeah.
She's amazing resume.
Yeah.
Stuff she's done.
I know. And today we're going to be talking about boys, boys, and more boys.
Woo-hoo.
Oh boy. Let's do this.
If your parents only knew of the shit you used to do, you'd be grounded for a long, long time.
Hi. Hi. I'm so happy to have you here.
No, I haven't when you texted me, I was like, you're one of those people that I rarely see, rarely get to talk to. And the second you text, I'm like, what do you need? I'm there. Who are, what's happening?
I'm going to cry.
Nice.
The feeling is so mutual. And now you've met my mom.
Mom.
Yes. Well, now I know where you came from. Now I get it.
I feel like we were instant friends. I don't know if you know the story, but we met on set of Party Girl.
Oh my gosh.
Was Party Girl first or was Cassandra French first?
I think Party Girl was first.
Party Girl was first. Yeah, okay.
Party Girl was first and
fun.
We were almost done filming and you came onto set. So like we had already established, you know, like kind of a rhythm and our group. And then you came in and like instantly I felt like we were like instant fast friends and family. Like it was just one of those like,
nice.
You just sparkle. You just sparkle. You really do.
Thank you so much. Oh, and that was a fun episode. I believe we were putting fun things into punch and all sorts of stuff.
We were. And on the sidelines, you were telling me some crazy stories, which has made me think, oh my God, this chick has stories to tell.
Yes.
Yeah. I do. I have many stories to tell. But specifically to the tune of this podcast, it actually took me a while to come up with something. Because
why?
Okay.
Yeah, so, please reverse. Tell us a little bit about your, well, first of all, mom, do you have questions? Because we're going to get to your family and your childhood in a second, but
awesome.
The minute I sent mom information about you, she goes, whoa,
it's true.
She's done a lot.
I mean, like what a resume.
Thank you.
Unbelievable.
Thank
what
you.
A resume. You were born in Ohio.
Yes.
My entire dad's family side of the family is in Ohio, not in Cleveland, but they're in Mansfield.
Oh, yeah.
Okay. So full disclosure, I was born in Cleveland, but we moved to California right before I turned four. So my memory of Cleveland is like eating snow or like, you know, like it's very, very, it's most of my memories from Cleveland come from visiting afterwards. Although I do have a very distinct memory of when my brother broke his arm. When I was like 3 years old.
Traumatic.
It was. This will give you an insight like into a little more of like where I came from. I remember going to hearing Anish broke his arm and going to the like bathroom to see how he was doing. And our nanny was there and she was putting Band-Aids on his elbow. And I was like, that's not going to fix a broken arm. Like I remember thinking this at three. And you know how your memories as a kid.
Amazing.
They're the same level of communicative skills that you have now. It's just that back then you didn't necessarily have the words to say it.
Exactly.
That's right.
Exactly.
I have all of these like memories from when I was younger of being extraordinarily judgmental of adults and like being like, you're doing it wrong. My fourth birthday party, my mom bought me this super sweet, like, princess cake. It was Cinderella, like, her body was plastic, and then the dress was the cake. It was this big.
Yes. Yeah, I remember those.
Always wanted one of those.
I lucked out, and I got one, so I will live vicariously through me for a second. But I ruined it because my aunties, and Indian aunties, God bless them, they get a really bad rap. My aunties are dope as fuck. So my aunties are like, trying to be really cute and being like, oh, who do you think this is? Is this Snow White? Is this Sleeping Beauty? I wonder who this is. And I'm literally in my head, I remember being like, oh my God, you are so stupid. That is Cinderella. like totally judging them for being like, don't be stupid. Don't, like, wow. Really?
So how did you get into, because you are multi-talented. I mean, you're a voiceover, you're on camera, you're a writer, you're a creator. How did you make that turn when it seems like your family, I'm assuming, as you were mentioning before, you had the doctor gene in you, the medical gene.
Yeah.
How did you make this shift?
Well, first of all, I do believe it was still in my blood because my parents, even though they are doctors, met acting in a play in medical school.
Wait, who does that?
I know, right? In their copious free time as medical students, they, my dad
was it a play about like someone's dying? What do we do, doc?
No,
or was
no.
it like, you know what I mean?
That would have been funny. No, it was just like a romantic comedy. And my dad was the leading man in this intercollegiate drama troupe that they had at their school. And his best friend was the director. And they were trying to decide who was going to play opposite him. And my dad kept vetoing every girl that came up. And so my Kantibai got very, very frustrated. My dad said, okay, the next girl that comes down those stairs, well, he probably didn't have an accent to Kantibai. So next girl that comes down those stairs, if she speaks Gujarati, that'll be the girl. And my mom was the next girl that walked down the stairs.
That is a great story.
Wait, and then she rejected him for 3 years. Yeah, then she rejected him for 3 years and he wore her down. So yes, so there was already in my blood, I think, or at least in our world, that the arts were always appreciated. And my dad did tell me, like, late, much later in life, that if he had ever been anything else, he would have been an actor.
Oh,
I know.
Nice.
So finally I was like, I did live the dream for you. I didn't have to be a doctor. And my mom actually said that very recently too, that she wanted to be a performer. I knew she wanted to be a dancer when she was younger, but I didn't know about that. So it was in their beings. It just wasn't necessarily something that was done. So they very much supported my interest in the arts. And then when I sort of figured out that that was an option to do that as a living, their main thing was, cool, treat it like you treat anything else. You got to make sure that you're good at it and you got to figure out how to make a living doing it. And if you can't make a living doing it at the beginning, figure out your way. You know, your gift leaving college is financial independence, meaning not we're giving you all the money, meaning you got to take care of it yourself. And so that's why I think the work ethic towards education specifically was very helpful in becoming an artist, because I do think there is a stereotype, but it's based in a little bit of reality, that actors that artists don't necessarily have, like, that they're a little bit loosey-goosey in terms of the structure in their lives. And some people who want to be actors and artists don't put in the work. Some people,
right?
People who succeed, obviously they put in the work. The chance of, you know, continuing to do this job, which is a marathon, not a sprint, it's a war of attrition.
Yeah, for sure.
The chances of getting to do this on the reg, if you don't have a certain work ethic or if you don't have a certain aptitude for learning, not just talent, but an aptitude for learning, I don't think people can do this for very long, because it becomes very, very difficult emotionally if it's that hard.
Oh my God. I'm like inspired. I've wanted to cry already like 3 times during this.
Oh, no,
you are. No. This is brilliant. That's such a brilliant approach.
And true.
To the work and to the career, where there sometimes in this career, you're like, oh, there isn't a ladder to climb, right? There isn't. It's not a structured thing, but that doesn't mean the work doesn't exist, and the learning doesn't need to continue.
And because there isn't a structure, because there is no one path, you really need to figure out, where do I need to put the structure in my life? You got to make sure you're paying your bills. You got to handle, you know, whatever your support system is. You got to figure out, as an old coach of mine once said, you got to figure out who's in your front row. You know,
That's cute. I like
Once you figure out those systems and set yourself up for success, then it's a lot easier to focus on the fun work.
Your parents must be so proud of you.
Yes.
Oh, yeah. Well, I'm very, very lucky. My father actually passed away a few years back, and we actually had the opportunity, though. We got to, I had moved back out here to Los Angeles about 7 years. Actually, I was going back and forth even before that, but like we had a good solid 10 years in the same city again as an adult. So we were able to spend a lot of time together. And like in a chunk of time before he got sick, he actually got to see Overwatch come out, which is one of the bigger projects that I've done, Mom. And it's a video game, but what's super cool about it, one of the things that's super cool about it, is that there are heroes of all different backgrounds, all different abilities, gender orientations, all of that stuff. And it was the first time that I got to have the hero that I didn't necessarily have as a kid, and know that little girls were going to have a South Asian female in a STEM field who's on the spectrum, who's like, there was this extraordinary and unique representation of a powerful person with a whole set of challenges, and that was multi-layered. They weren't defined by any one of those things. And so my dad, when that came out, it was like he kept pictures of Symmetra in his phone. He was always sharing like what I was working on with the doctors at the hospital and all of that. But this one, I don't know. There was something really special knowing that he left, knowing that this one was there.
Nice. And then, that's beautiful.
Yeah, and I know that they're proud of me. I know that I spend my life wanting to make them and my husband proud, and I know they're already proud of me. So it just lifts me up even more. Because when you feel like you don't have that approval, then it makes you smaller. When you know you do and you just want to increase it, it makes you bigger.
Yes, absolutely.
You get it. I see
that.
You too. Yeah. You guys get it. You guys know. Oh. Look at you two together.
I know.
You're
I know.
So
it's
cute.
It's such a joy to be here with her, and like such a great opportunity for us to do something fun and speak to like-minded.
Yeah,
and,
absolutely.
And fun people. And so this is all beautiful, and I'm so glad to have you here. But now I'm ready to rip the rug from your mama and your husband, and perhaps disappoint them. You know what I mean? Like, we know you got some stuff going on that you've been hiding all these years.
Time to spill it. Let's hear it.
I will preface this by saying my husband does know these stories. So
mostly my mom. Full transparency.
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. No. we have crazier stories.
I know.
So I will set the stage. My parents were a combination of traditional and very, very open-minded. And so there were certain things that they were very like treated us like adults. All, you know, we were always felt very intelligent, very respected. And then there were certain rules that were very traditional. So my mom had decreed, under no circumstances are you to date until you are 16 years old. Right. So I just said, so I just told you what happens when someone says what I should do.
We got it.
So obviously,
and
I felt
you're
that,
so stinking cute. You know,
well, thank you. At the time, I didn't feel that way, and I was definitely, I didn't look like the gals that I in the school that I grew up in. But I took it more as a challenge, I think, than as a rule. So in eighth grade, there was this lovely, lovely guy. His name is Keo Powell. He's still out there in the world, and he's very, very sweet. And Keo was, you know, really like buff. He was like ripped. He was like wiry. You know what I mean? Like you're like a anatomical, like, I don't, that's what like that in the anatomy books, that's what you're supposed to look like. Like that's
wait, he was your age? How old was he?
Yeah. He was our age. He was totally our age.
Wow.
And he was not a particularly tall dude. I think he was probably like maybe 5'4", But I'm so tiny that, like, to me, that's like, you're 6 foot three.
You're speaking our language.
Yeah, we like that. Feel it.
That's what I mean. My books, I am fun size. There, that's all you need to know.
Yeah. Fun size.
So,
yes.
So we got together. We hung out by the lockers.
Yes.
We go to movies in groups with our friends, but then peel off and make out in the back of the theater.
I distinctly
remember making out during the movie Willow and making out during the movie Colors, because you know those two belong together. I distinctly remember those. Hooray.
Everyone has a thing, you know what I mean? You know, we don't kink shame here.
Right? Everybody's got their own thing.
Yeah.
But then we moved on in our relationship, and when I became a freshman, and I was heartbroken at the time, like all young girls are when their first love is over. I do distinctly remember, this is so dramatic. Oh God. Okay. In eighth grade, there was this award you could get at the end of the year in eighth grade called the American Legion Award, which was for like most well-rounded, you know, you do all the things person. And I was a strong candidate for it.
Of course.
I knew they did not encourage dating, flirting, touching, all of that stuff in our school.
Bummer.
And so I knew that there was one of the teachers who was in charge of like deciding who the American Legion Award went to, who had seen me and Keo kind of, you know, being flirty McFlirty. And I remember turning to my best friend and saying, "They can't keep the award from me for love, can they?"
Drama.
Wait, that's fabulous.
I mean, it just
and
says
did they?
No, I got it. I totally got
Yay!
It. In fact, I think it's in our story right now.
Woo,
yes,
woo,
love prevails. Woo, love always prevails.
Oh my gosh, that's so funny.
There's that story. That's of the two stories, I think that's my
favorite. So did your mom, your parents never knew?
No. I mean, maybe they knew and didn't tell me, but I feel like I would have gotten in trouble.
She knows now.
At least they would have. I mean, like,
would they have liked Keo?
Shout out to Keo, because he was dope. Yeah, they would have loved Keo. Really, really good kid. And he, like, look, when we became freshmen in school, he was the kicker for the varsity football team.
Yeah.
So I was like, dude knew what he was doing. Like, he had skills. He wasn't necessarily the student that I was.
What
but
kind
I thought,
of skills?
What skills were that?
Hey. I mean, we'll just leave that there. But they were 13. We don't be gross. Yes, he was charming. He was very charming and very respectful and very sweet. And I did meet his parents, and I guess they must have known.
I feel like your parents knew.
They had to have, but I don't know. I really don't know, because here's the other thing. My mom was an obstetrician gynecologist, so she was on high alert for like anything that could go horribly wrong with my life a little too early, or anything that could happen early that would go horribly wrong. That's what I mean.
So
she was very on high alert.
Did your mom give you pap smears?
No. That was not, I actually don't think I actually went for a normal checkup until after I moved out of the house.
Okay. I'm like, is that crossing a line? Like,
I don't know. It's funny. I don't know if it would have been. It's hard to say, because they were definitely like, the house was, you know, we developed
stirrups everywhere.
Back in our day where we used to develop the pictures, remember? We would like develop our pictures at the drugstore, and we'd get them back, and I'd be like, oh, look, there's Sheila auntie, there's Sulu auntie, there's someone's spleen, there's a surgery. It'd all be in the same. So it was like medical all around.
Oh my God. That's so funny.
So
there's
so
much.
Was HIPAA not a thing back then?
The what?
HIPAA? Like, is it called HIPAA?
Well, like, it's not like it's called HIPAA, but like I wouldn't know who it was, whose spleen it was.
Oh, okay. Yeah.
They would do that for their own like reference and stuff like that.
Got it.
I would never
know. Vaginas.
Yes, exactly. Yeah. A 10-year account of that's one story.
I love that. That's a sweet one.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, here's a not so sweet one in the same
bed. Yes.
Because, you know, I you said wise beyond your years. I was precocious, and I, like many young girls, thought that I was a grown up well before I was a grown up. Apparently I thought when I was, you know, turning 4.
Yeah.
But
with the Cinderella cake.
Yeah. So senior year of college. I knew that no one was going to ask me to prom. So I decided that I was going to like head that off at the pass by getting into a show at the local community college. And then on prom night, oh, I'm sorry, I couldn't go to prom because I was doing a show. Yeah, I know.
Smart. Wow, right? Planning it.
I'm like, I'm going to be productive. I'm just going to be proactive and productive. So I had already done some shows with this director and this general group of actors. And, okay. First of all, everything was legal. Everything was legal.
We don't want legal.
Cause I don't want to promote, illegality. When I share this story, God, you could tell I'm getting like a little nervous to share it.
Yeah.
I know. I'm getting giddy.
So there was this one guy who had been in a few shows that I'd done.
Mm, yes.
He was gorgeous. He was also significantly older than I was.
Oh,
yes. So never thought like that
he was 85.
He needed my help.
Like a hot
85, but he looked more like 60. No.
Yes.
He was gorgeous. And then I will protect the innocent by not, even though there was nothing was wrong, but I'm not going to, say his name and embarrass him.
She's so nervous.
I am. Cause I'm trying to, I don't care what my mom thinks at this point. I just care what everybody else thinks now. I can tell. So we started like hanging out and then making out. And then, I mean, like, first time I made out on top of a car was with this guy. Like, it was
nice.
The first time. I mean, you got to figure out where you're leaning. It's a little awkward.
Wait, where do you? Oh, I'm thinking like on the top of a car. No.
Oh, no. Like, if you're leaning against the car, or are you leaning? Are you flexible enough to do it on the front hood? Which I was. You know, like, there's all sorts of things you can do.
Flexibility is everything.
But, it really is. This was the main reason I became a dancer. Just kidding. So, and God bless him. He was very nervous. I remember him saying one night, because I mentioned to him, I was like, my parents told me I couldn't date until I was 16. I thought I was being cool. Couldn't date until I was 16. And here I am, well past that now. And I did that before, blah, blah, blah. And he was like, okay, you do realize that I am the reason your parents instilled that rule. This is precisely the thing that your parents did not want you to be doing. And I was like, what are we doing? We're just making out. It's no big deal. So yeah, that one, I don't even remember how it ended.
What play was it? That's a good question.
I'm trying to think if this will out the person.
Okay. All right. Was it a musical?
It was a musical. It was a very unflattering musical. Like, there was nothing sexy about this musical.
Picturing him being like Peter Pan.
Well, he was not in the show. At this point, he was working.
You were schnooking Daddy Warbucks.
No. Okay. It was not like the other shows that I had done with him. He had played two very sexy roles, but this time not so much. And I had always been like the chorus girl, cause I was little. Like, when I did West Side Story, my first community theater show, my nickname was Jailbait. So like, that's how that's,
they
that's
set you up for this.
They set me up. Like, they just, of course. Was a gauntlet that was thrown.
Yeah.
So I am more nervous about these stories coming out because I'm more worried for other people. But I think about my mom and how cool she is, because the second I turned, legal, she was right there, very pragmatic. I remember the summer after freshman year, between freshman and sophomore year of college, I came home, I worked at Disneyland, and I met this lovely—
Wait, did we talk about this?
I think we did.
We must have. Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah.
I was a
what'd you do there?
Pageant helper. I'm still afraid that the mouse police are going to come after me if I talk publicly
about
things. Yeah. Names.
Constantly worried.
Yeah.
Yeah. Right.
Funny.
I admit freely that my Achilles heel is that I live in fear of getting in trouble. Like, I don't, even when I've not done anything wrong, I'm afraid I've done something wrong that I didn't know I did wrong and someone's going to—
How funny.
Which is why the two most scary acronyms to me in the world are IRS and NDA. I legitimately had a dream. I had a dream two nights ago that I violated an NDA and they were coming after me. That was a dream. That's like in my subconscious, that fear.
Just constantly.
Fear. Yeah, yeah. When we shot Ms. Marvel, my husband did not know what we were shooting until it was public.
You were that afraid.
I was that nope, that's not how this goes. They gave me an NDA. They told me I'm not supposed to tell anyone, so I'm not telling you. I'm going to go away and shoot for a year and a half. I'm in a show and you'll be really excited when I'm in it. The end.
You know what? Wow. That means you're a good secret holder.
Yeah,
I am. I do one of two things. I either just forget it on purpose, or I constantly remember, like, well, I don't want anyone sharing my shit. So
yeah, but now we want to hear your secrets.
But I legitimately legitimately forget other people's secrets. Kind of like I bamf my or whatever, the Men in Black myself.
That's brilliant.
Right. I don't know if it's brilliant so much as I have a bad short-term memory. So that summer I met this really good looking guy, very, very talented. And, he came over to, I was obviously still living with my parents at the, you know, that summer. He met my parents, we hung out, we ended up making out that night, and doing some other things. And, but I was not sexually active at the time. That was not a thing. Like I barely begun the making out, exploring bodies process at this point. And I told my mom, like, in the morning, I was like, so mom, yeah, like Devin and I kind of got together last night and she was cooking. And I remember her just like, do you want birth control?
I love her.
I was like, no, I'm good. You started me on that nice and early. That's not where this was going, but, I'm good. Yeah. She was always very, very pragmatic. And as I, you know, flipped over and she started opening up more, I say flipped over, like as I started growing up and becoming more of an adult, she was very, 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 like some of the advice she gave was baller advice.
Do tell.
Oh, come on.
First of all, and the world knows this now, so I might as well share it with you. I think it was back in my freshman year and I was calling my mom and I was like, hey, my mom, just like, nobody wants to date me here. It's just like high school. Like I can't, like no one wants to date me. And she said, well, you know, just don't date someone because you're desperate. It's better to just masturbate.
Oh,
she's not wrong.
Not wrong. Totally not wrong.
Most pragmatic. You're right.
Wow.
Right.
So straightforward, but baller.
But again, because she's an OBGYN talking about this, it was like nothing for her.
Yeah. Yeah.
Solid advice there. And then this is like some gold medal winning stuff. This is like dating 601.
Okay, I'm writing it down.
You have to treat dating like a buffet. The first time through, with a little bit of everything, you try it, you put it all on your plate, you know, just eat it up. Okay. So I like this one, and this one's not so much. This one, you decide which ones you like because you want to try seconds. So you go back, you get your seconds. Maybe this one, I really like that one. I like this one too. I like this one. Okay, fine. You go back, you finish your second course, and now you're a little bit full, but you're like, there's just that one dish. One dish that I have to go back. She goes, that's the guy you marry.
That's so cute.
That is so cute.
What kind of dish is your husband? Would you say?
What's the dish?
A delicious Cuban dish. My husband is beyond. My husband is like the greatest human being ever. Apologies to every other human being on the planet. He's just the best. He is a rock star. he's a musician. He's a bass player in a band called Vintage Trouble. And
my mom loves music.
I love Cuban music. I love Cuban men. I dated one once. I never told you.
That's for another episode. There you go.
Yeah.
Yeah.
All right. He's half Cuban, half American, like American mix. But he definitely leans more towards his Latin roots in terms of his sensibility. So knows how to move. Mm-hmm. There was an article that reviewed the band that called him the snake-hipped bassist. And I was like, that's
right. Yes.
I know those snake hips.
Yeah. That's so cute.
And where are they playing? Like, where?
They just got back from their European tour. So they are like, they are like legit. And I don't just say this because I'm married to them. I loved them well before that. They've toured, they played with the Rolling Stones in Hyde Park. They toured with The Who. They toured with Lenny Kravitz. They do their own tours.
Wow.
They're really, really cool. The best description I've ever heard of them was if a male Tina Turner fronted early Led Zeppelin.
Yeah.
Oh, we'll be there. Please. Let us know.
Yes. Send us a
Vintage
invite.
Trouble. Yeah, they're excellent. But he and he had like red flags. Forget about red flags. He had red fireworks saying, don't date him. This is a bad idea.
Yeah.
I'd just gotten out of a very not great relationship that should have ended after the third date and lasted about 6.5 years. And when I say should have, I mean, for both of us, this was not off the buffet, not even on the buffet.
Yeah, it was off the menu. No.
Yeah.
This was like, God, I don't even know where to put it with the analogy. Like I kept going back to the dish, but it kept giving me indigestion. And I kept going back, thinking maybe this time it won't work, but I really want it. This is the thing I'm supposed to want. And then, you know, didn't work out. So I that relationship had ended. There's a car wreck. It was all this stuff that I was like, just like not doing. I did not like myself. I had very low self-esteem. And the gentleman that I had dated earlier was very unavailable in many ways. And so, I'm like, I moved to California. I moved to Los Angeles. And I'm like, you know what? I'm good. I'm closed for business.
Like, I'll just masturbate instead. According to my mom.
We're going to do some renovations on the shop. We'll do some renovations on the shop. We'll figure out what's going on here. We might have a focus group. I don't know. But then eventually we'll have a grand opening and one dude will be invited. So, I was completely content to be like, yeah, I'm not looking right now. I'm just solid. And of course, when you're not looking, it's precisely when the person shows up.
Absolutely. They always say that. And it sounded like bullshit.
It's true.
It's so true. But we didn't start dating right away because both of us had reasons not to. And people were telling us that we were dating. People were telling us that we were sleeping together way before any of that, like way before we'd even touched each other, and no one believed us. But so there was obviously energy between us because people were saying that. But yeah, red fireworks coming off. I'm like, I'm a musician and getting out of this relationship that I've been in for a long time and do a lot of touring and all this stuff. And I was like, well, I'm going to give it one more chance. And if it's not this guy who I'm starting to fall madly in love with, then it's the nunnery because I got nothing. then my picker is truly broken. Because that was how I felt after the previous one. That like, oh, my picker is broken. I'm just getting this worse. I was not getting better at choosing people to date. I was getting worse. Mm. Worked out just fine.
Cool.
That's awesome.
Cool matchup.
Yeah.
Right?
And he's... Oh, I mean, I could spend an entire podcast just talking about him. I could spend a lot longer than a podcast talking about him. He's... I've never met a person who is more interested in watching and helping people grow and cultivate.
Nice. That's actually so nice.
When people say, oh, I care about your success more than mine or whatever. When people say that, usually it's lip service. He gets so excited. He gets so excited about my independence. He gets so excited about everything that I do. Like, he's so, nice. so beautiful. And during this pandemic, during lockdown, you know, things went 50-50 for most couples, right? It could have gone either way. But he obviously, you know, couldn't tour because the band couldn't tour. We were in lockdown. It was not safe to do that. And he, completely ego-free, was like, I know how I'm going to provide for this family. What do you need? What do you need? What do you need to be able to keep going?
Wow.
Thank you. What can I do to make your life easier? What can I do? And he got really close with my mom, who still lives in Orange County. So when I was away filming, like I remember distinctly calling from Atlanta and being like, hey, babe, what are you doing? Oh, I'm binge watching The Crown with your mom.
Oh,
yeah.
He stepped in
and understood, unlike a lot of other people might have taken this, and a lot of other men, I hate to say specifically, might have taken it as such an affront to their manhood.
Yes.
Or, you know, that like, and might have really felt felt bad that, oh, I can't provide. Oh, I can't do this. But he understands that. And hopefully a lot of this has come from me also reminding him that there are a gazillion different ways to provide for a person.
That's right.
And I don't need your money. Neither one of us need each other's money. We need each other. And so he just like stepped up and he was taking great care of himself. He really focusing on his spiritual, like all of these things that he actually did what a lot of people said we should all do, which is when lockdown happened, he made the most of himself during that time.
Wow.
And it's been extraordinary. And as a result, I was allowed to be so prolific. Because I was able to work because, you know, shooting opened back up pretty soon. And I was doing voiceover from the house.
Right. Which is brilliant.
Because I'm married to a musician, we have a studio in the house. So everything, I didn't have to miss a beat.
Wow.
But, he is the most delicious, spicy Cuban picadillo con plátanos.
Yes.
Mom wants to know if he has a brother.
Yeah, really?
He is an only child because as his beautiful mom has said, why would I have another kid when I got the perfect one the first time? Like, wow.
So he was your one hot Cuban dish. There you go. Buffet.
That's exactly. He was my, and that one did not give me indigestion. That one was gluten-free. That one was delicious. That one I could go back and eat every day. And that sounds wrong. I'm going to leave it in there.
And I'm sure he's got a lot of fun stories he shared with you about his past too.
Oh my goodness. So many. Like when he shared the stories about what he did in high school versus what I did in high school, like first of all, the only time I got grounded in my life was because I did not go out. There was
a night that
my parents were going out to some party and I was supposed to go out with a friend. And instead I decided I was going to stay in with another friend and order pizza. So fine.
My kind of girl.
You know, right? So it just felt like a better thing. So the next morning, my mom is not happy. And she says, you know, last night we came home, the garage door was open, the door was locked, but the garage door was open. I thought you were going out. And I was like, oh yeah, no, we decided this, blah, blah, blah. So, well, you know, you were supposed to go out and now you're grounded. And I was so confused. I was like, because I didn't go out, I can't go out. Like, I don't understand how this works. And looking back, I sort of understand her logic, but, that was the only, like, I got in trouble for doing the right, like doing
That's
something.
That's awesome.
Right?
Wow.
So, but his stories, as if he wasn't cool enough, like I was the kid who cut class to get on the exercise bike and study for the other class.
Oh my gosh.
He was the kid who did all the things that the Ungroundable podcast is about. Like,
we might have to have him
yeah,
on.
Yeah, we may have to have him. Yeah, I think so.
It's pretty spectacular because, and I remember like listening to his stories and I was like, what was I doing in high school? Like, this is,
yeah.
You had a whole like second life in high school. Because I'm not encouraging this, kids. Stay in school, don't do drugs. But he was very much the kid who like, he was smart enough to know exactly the minimum amount he had to do
to get by.
Yeah. That he could go surfing so that he could go do all the other things, like do all the things that he wanted to do.
He was a dude. He was a dude.
Well, a smart dude.
He was a very, very, very smart dude. Like he's disturbingly intelligent. And I say that knowing that my brother is also my brother is a genius. And I put the two of them are very much in the same lane. And, so he has the best stories. And then we of course have like couples stories that are
nice.
I mean, when you put an actress and a rock star together on tour, like
everything you're saying feels like a great movie or a TV show. I feel like you're like killing it. We're going to take a quick break and we're going to come back and I'm going to share some stories that some of our listeners submitted of their Ungroundable moments that they haven't shared.
Love it.
So we'll be
here for this. Okay.
Oh yes. Yeah. And we need your input.
We'll be right back. Okay.
Well, guys, just wanted to take a quick break to say a big thank you for your support. It is a new show. So you guys being here, spreading the love and sharing it with everyone you know means
everything to us.
And if you could leave a rating and review, tell us what you guys think. Thank you. Thank you. And thank you. Also, we are about to share some of your stories in this next segment, but if you want to submit your stories for us to read in future episodes, go over to ungroundablepodcast.com. Let us know what you did and what you've been hiding all these years. Also, if you want to watch this full video in its entirety and watch my mom's beautiful face for the entire hour plus, head over to Patreon where you can see the full video version of this podcast. Also, we can come hang out with other members. There's early episode access. There's bonus episodes, special episodes, and there's a whole nother show on there that I'm doing with Jeff called Sidebar. It's the only place to get the full video podcast, like I said, and so much more. Head over to Patreon. It's patreon.com/ungroundablepodcast. Back to it. All right. We are back, and I haven't vetted these, so we're just going to dive in together, the three of us, and see what we get ourselves into. And if anyone out there listening wants to submit their stories, you can go to ungroundablepodcast.com. Share them with us. We will not reveal who you are unless you want us to. So feel free. Lay it on us thick. All right. First up, number one submission. I wasn't the kind of kid my parents had to worry about, but I did rebel on my senior ditch day. My friend Em and I decided we'd smoke weed with the rest of our friends. This was my first time. I'm already nervous. My heart's pounding.
Yeah.
Em and I were the only ones who smoked. I don't think I inhaled it right, and I didn't really get stoned. But if my dad would have known what I was doing, I would have been grounded. I recently told my dad that I smoke weed after all these years of feeling like he'd be mad at me, and he didn't seem to care. We do live in Oregon after all. Everyone smokes weed here. If they don't, they should.
Oh, I was prepared for like a bad trip.
Me yeah. too, because when you first start smoking weed, I mean, you think like your heart is racing. I remember a first few times thinking I was like, this is it. This is the end.
I have
like panic attack.
I have only had not good experiences. It's not the drug for me.
Yeah,
it's not for you.
You can kind of tell the person I am. Like, I want something that makes me smarter and faster, not slower and dumber. So like, I need that. Like, I so
get
I feel
this
like
woman some cocaine.
Exactly.
Oh my
get me go
God.
Cocaine curry right here.
That's yeah, a great no, stripper
I,
name.
That is.
Oh, I have many, and that's one of them. yeah, Weepy McGee is one. It's a whole other story. Yeah, I've had my one great pot story. Can we? Yes, please. The first time I actually tried smoking marijuana was Christmas Eve, 2015. Like, I was late in the game. I was like, I don't think this is my thing. I don't think it's going to go well. So someone had given Rick a weed pen for his birthday, and I was going to make
this was like really late in the game.
Yeah, this was
what's
this
a weed
was pretty
pen?
Recent.
A weed pen's like a vape.
Like a vape.
Oh, a vape.
Like a vape.
Oh, yeah.
And so, we had talked about me trying it at some point or another. And I was going to cook dinner that night and all this stuff. And he's like, wait. So what? Maybe tonight's the night since we're going to be home. Like, maybe tonight's the night that we try it. And I was like, oh, that's a great idea. Here's what we'll do. I'll get all the food prepped.
She has a plan.
Of course she does. She does. So here's what we'll do. I'll get all the food prepped. I'll put the sweet potatoes in the oven. I will, set the alarm and everything. We can take a puff or whatever you call it. We'll to this day, I don't even speak well about it. We'll go down to the jacuzzi and sit there for like 10, 15 minutes. And then we'll come back upstairs to the apartment and take everything out of the oven and it'll be perfect.
I'm worried about the sweet potato.
I'm worried about the oven. The oven.
So I'm going to reenact my choice of how to smoke the sweet pen. Okay, so I just.
Oh, by the way, if people aren't seeing this, you can see the whole video on Patreon.
Yeah,
please
check
it out for the perfect reenactment.
Right.
So so Rick hands it to me, and I'm like, and I just inhale, and I don't like. Like, I don't let it go out, right? And I'm like asking for specific instructions. He's like, yeah, just do that. I'm like, okay.
Oh my God.
Oh no.
Oh no.
Oh no.
Oh my.
Oh no.
When do I stop?
So I have now,
as a singer, inhaled my entire lung capacity. of this weed pen.
That and diaphragm goes, was and, working.
It was. Work.
And Rick, you were inhaling that whole, you know what? It'll be fine. It'll be fine. Don't worry about it. It'll be fine. Because he knows, he's Mr. I got you. Like, he will not let anything happen to me. So I'm not worried about it. He also didn't want to panic me. So we got down to the jacuzzi. Immediately, I'm already becoming dumber. But I'm feeling really self-conscious about the fact that I can't stop giggling. So this combination of I'm so embarrassed. Ha ha, stop making fun of me. Like this whole thing.
Oh my God, roller coaster.
Yeah. It was a roller coaster. I was like, I don't like being dumb. And then we got out of the jacuzzi and immediately my legs were like, nope, this is not happening. This is not how these things work. These two things at the bottom of your body, that's not how they work. I'm like leaning on things, trying to get upstairs. We get upstairs and I immediately, like I go for the floor. I immediately butt in the air, like I'm a cat, head on the floor, butt in the air. And Rick's like, what do you need? What do you need me to do? What do you need? And I said, the sweet potatoes take. So I'm directing him how to finish cooking this meal.
Oh no.
While I am face down, ass up in the air, trying to regain my bearings.
Doing the child's pose.
Oh my God. Yeah. It's like straight up. I'm like, maybe yoga will fix it. And ultimately what did the trick, and I don't know if this is medically proven or not, but he gave me a glass of sugar water.
What?
And apparently someone had done that for him when he was in Amsterdam once doing things that he shouldn't have been doing at the time. And he had something that was laced with something else. I don't know what it was, but the bartender came outside with a glass of sugar water and said, drink this. And apparently it's because your blood sugar tanks so fast. If you have too much of it, that the blood sugar drop is what's making you like lose everything.
Good to know.
That's good to know. Next time you see the devil, mom always sees the devil.
Oh, wow.
I saw the devil once.
Because I feel like that's an edible situation.
Yeah, I think you were doing popcorn. Remember that one time you went to the movie theater?
Oh, yeah.
And she had popcorn weed in it. Really
did
it.
Never heard a good story that came out of eating edibles.
No,
it's not great.
Don't do that.
Don't do that. My brother had a, we'll have to have him on here.
Oh, yeah.
He has an edible at the hospital story. Just got too high, man.
They called 911.
Yeah, I think he thought he was going to die.
And your dad had to pay for the...
Dad's still paying back the
dad had to pay
bill.
For the ambulance.
Oh, God.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
All right. So there's pot.
So there's pot. This is another pot one. I used to take the water bottles my parents recycled, great parents, and made homemade bongs.
Oh.
Wow. We love to reduce, reuse, and recycle.
That's right.
That's very industrious. I would be a little bit nervous about the hot water and the plastic.
And that plastic, the BPA situation.
The BPAs, especially if it was when you were a kid before we were all like paying attention to the BPAs.
Yeah,
but now
I agree.
I've just scared this person and I'm sorry. You're fine.
I used to make it, did you know this? Out of apples.
Apples isn't the common thing though.
Yeah.
Apples is
you
totally
take
a common
an
thing.
Apple and you poke on the top and you poke in the side so that it connects.
When we were living together at the house?
Yeah. All those apples from Gelson's. You wonder where they went.
Yeah. I was wondering.
Reuse.
Thanks.
You know?
Reduce.
Exactly. You reuse, recycle. Reduce. I like it.
Yeah.
I like it.
Did you ever talk to your parents about drugs?
Drugs? Oh, all the time. That was never a taboo topic with us.
That's
and my parents
amazing.
Were trying. They were trying to get me drunk when I was like a kid, not a kid, but like I stopped drinking at 11, and I started drinking when I met Rick, because my parents would let us have like a glass of wine with dinner or whatever, and they totally smart people. They totally made it like it wasn't a rebellion. So I didn't care. Like I didn't really want to do it. When I was 11, there was a health and safety unit and Mrs. Kroll scared the living daylights out of me by showing us what cirrhosis of the liver looked like. And I was like, get them done.
Yeah.
I was like, that worked. That worked on at least one child in that class. And so I just was like, yeah, I'm good. I'm not going to do it. Don't need to do it. I'm really kooky without it. So you'll think I'm drunk. And then finally, when I met Rick, I was like, well, you know, this guy will make sure I get home. Like it's this guy. And if it's not him, like one of the band members, one of his brothers, you know, one of them will make sure I get home. So that's when I started drinking. So a few years ago, I was being all girly and I was like, oh, baby, remember the first time I said I love you? And he said, yeah, you were drunk in the gas station puking out the door and you said you love me. And I was like, what? No, that is not the first time. He's like, yeah, that's when it happened. That's when you said you love me. And I was like, oh my God, I can't.
Oh no.
Because it was, you know, now was not the time for our relationship to start. But the way I see it, I think it was one of those like, I just love you. I just love you. Like, that's how I picture it. But to him,
but he
that
thought
was
that
moment.
Was the first time.
That was the first time. And I'm like, and I'm like, wow, can we delete that one from the record? Because the one I'm thinking of is way better. God bless you. Yeah. It was a really good night.
Yeah. Oh my God. Well, you are simply a delight. And I want to tell everyone about your book. And if you could tell us where you can get it, because I'm so proud of you.
Thank you. Give us
a little bit, because it came out of a YouTube web series, right?
Yes, it did. So it's called I Am Fun Size and So Are You, Thoughts from a Tiny Human on Living a Giant Life. And the web series was a web series I started of the same name, although we shortened it to I Am Fun Size, because in 2017, after my father had passed away and I was kind of going through this, you know, my father had passed away. So I wasn't depressed, but I needed some solace. And that was also when I was discovering the incredible communities surrounding gaming and voiceover and all of these things. And the online community was so generous and so giving, but they would also write in DMs about their own questions about their own lives that I did not feel qualified to answer. And so they were being so generous of themselves and their art. I felt like, okay, I have to give something back. The art is not happening because I can't draw nearly as well as these folks. But the one thing that I can give people that no one else has is my set of experiences and how I dealt with them. I can't tell them to do it that way. I can just share these stories with them in the event that one of these tools works in their toolbox. So one night I just recorded a video saying, I have a new email address, Anjali@iamfunsize.com. Send me your questions and I will tell you about stories that from my life that apply. Nice. And it ended up being much more popular than I had expected, like much more. And it wasn't about the numbers. It was about the responses that I was getting. Totally. And when I would go to conventions and comic cons and people would tell me, yes, they were talking about the games and they were talking about the other stuff that I was in. But some people would be like, I just watched I Am Fun Size and I finally got over my social anxiety and went out and got a job. And this is what's happening.
Wow. Great.
So that meant the world to me. So a few years later, last year, I decided that I had a few hours a day available and that now is the time to do the book. And so I did. So I expanded on all of the story, I expanded on all of the episodes or most of the episodes and some of the episodes that I brought in friends for as well, and told stories from my life and different ways that I have of thinking of things because of the stories. And it's a very easy read. It's very conversational. I call it your buddy in a book. You can read it straight through. You can open up to random pages. There are adorable pictures in it that make it look
like
a children's
book. Your buddy in a book.
It looks like a children's book. It is decidedly not a children's book. It is 312 pages. That should tip you off. But it's got a lot of F-bombs in it because it's me. But it's very, the main goal of this book is to let people know that no matter how unique their journey and no matter how unique their challenges, they are not alone.
That's true.
Someone out there is there for you, with you, standing by you, watching you, cheering you on. There is someone out there. And if not in your immediate circle, there's someone online who needs to hear your story. There's someone online who would miss you if you were gone. So
that's right.
That's very much what I wanted the book to do. And so, yeah, it's out now. When we first put it out, it hit a bunch of bestseller lists, which was very exciting. Hit number 5 on the Wall Street Journal. Highly unexpected.
Wow, that's fantastic.
Crazy.
And where can people find it?
Yeah, where can we buy it?
Yes. So we can find the ebook on Amazon or barnesandnoble.com. You can find the paperback on Amazon, or if you are international or just want to get a signed copy, you can find it at streamily.com/AnjaliBamani. And then the audiobook is available on Audible, which I'm really excited about. The audiobook is really fun.
That's wonderful. Yes. Yeah. I have the book coming. It should be at the front door any moment now, but I will listen to the Audible because I would love to hear you.
Yeah.
It's really fun.
Hear it from you.
I wrote the book as a conversation and getting to say it out loud. Just, it was really fun to record.
Absolutely. Really, really. And where can people find you, generally speaking, for those who don't already follow you?
Yes, all over the interwebs. My handle in most places is Sweet Anj, but because I'm the only Indian in the world who isn't good at spelling, I decided to do it with three E's. I am good at spelling. I just decided to rebel. So it's Sweetanj. And so you can find me there. You can find me, that's my YouTube, my Twitter, and my Instagram. Facebook, I'm Anjali Bamani. And then, like I said, that forward-facing email address where you can send me anything, anjali@iamfunsize.com. My team does not read that. So if you need to send something that is private, as I told you, I am a vault. So no one will know that it is you. Hmm. And I use that email too to get more topics for future writing for I Am Fun Size and future episodes. So
excellent. That my audience who maybe isn't familiar with you, I feel like most of them are, but for those who aren't, this is going to resonate like so perfectly with them. So I'm excited to share all of our people. This is wonderful.
God. I'm just excited. This was so much fun.
Thank you for joining us.
We try to be fun. We try to be as fun as possible.
Yeah. I don't think you need to try. I think you guys just show up and you're fun. I feel like that. I mean, like I said, I know Lisa. Now I know, well, obviously, okay, I get it. I get Lisa. Because here you are.
Well, thanks for being part of our family. We love you so much. And we have our coffee date coming up. We have to figure that out.
Yes, we do. We absolutely do. Okay.
Thank you. Thanks for joining.
Thanks so much.
Woo! That was fun.
So fun.
Also, I didn't tell her this, and if you're listening, you will hear me say it to you. Otherwise, I'll talk to you in person. But like, that girl got a lot of action. She's a hot commodity.
She was on, I'm not even going to say where she was, but we heard some great stories.
Oh, we heard some great stories off camera as well. She's full of them, and we're just so honored to have her there today.
That was fun.
That was super fun. And I can't wait to check out her book. Seriously, I ordered it on Amazon. It said it's coming today. We'll see if they follow through on that. Well, thank you guys so much for joining us. If you guys want to see video clips every week, you can check it out on YouTube. You know where to find me on YouTube and how to YouTube it. Guys, also, we have a Patreon. And before I even tell you more about the Patreon, I want to say a special thanks to one of our first patrons on Patreon. And that is my girl, Sparkle-lific. Sparkle-rific. Sparkle, you know who you are. We have talked before, and she's amazing.
Sparkle terrific.
Sparkle terrific. Sparklerific. You have been nothing but the most kind and supportive of me and my channel and now this podcast and Patreon. So thank you, thank you, thank you. I love and adore you. So guys, head over to Patreon. There's lots of cool perks over there, like bonus episodes, a whole nother show with my husband Jeff called Sidebar, early episode access, live stream hangouts. Ooh, mom going like this, moving those shoulders. Lots of fun stuff going on over there. So join us, won't you? That's patreon.com/ungrandable podcast. I'm feeling crazy. The coffee has kicked in. I mean, this is just the start of our podcast journey together, and I feel like we're nailing it.
We are nailing it. So fun.
So fun. And there's so many different kinds of people with all these great different stories. But I think the humanizing thing is that we all have secrets and pasts. But once we let it out,
everybody has a great story. We all have stories. Yeah, that's what's so fun about it.
Makes us who we are.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. So spill it.
So spill the beans, folks. We're your hosts, Lisa Schwartz and
Mom
Schwartz. Special thanks to our guest, Anjali Bimani. Our executive producers are me, Lisa Schwartz, Aaron Corney, Rob Goldman, and Shanti Brooke. Our editor and engineer is Jason Portizo. Our music is by Omer Benzvi. And the song is performed, our theme song is performed by Leah Donovan Jones. This is Ungroundable with Lisa Schwartz and Mom, and it is a Human Content production. Pew, pew, pew.
Human content.